A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on July 9, 1995, in the series The Human Story, Paradigms of Grace, entitled Adam and Eve, Mudslide or Emergence. The scripture readings are Genesis 2, verses 4 through 17, and Revelation 22, verses 1 through 5. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 2, verse 17, and Revelation 22, verse 2. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
We are all part of the human story, and the human story is full of questions and mystery, and I suspect that we are here this morning because we all enter into that mystery, and finally we have those deep existential questions about where things come from, whence we come, and whither we go, and what is the meaning of it all in the meantime. The human story is the story of wonder and magnificence. It is the story of tragedy and suffering. And we are all bound up in the totality of that story. We used to publish in our bulletin a statement which came from the theologian Hans Küng, and he reminded us that the line between good and evil does not separate us from them, but rather that line runs right through the church and right through every human heart. We are all a part of the human story. And I suspect that whether or not you are here as a part of the regular rhythm of your life, or whether you may have recently come, the reason for it, the motivating impetus for coming to worship is because of those questions that dog our steps and demand some kind of answer, some kind of clue to the mystery and the meaning of life. There was, in the rise of the modern period, the age of the Enlightenment, a French philosopher. His name was Auguste Comte. And he wrote a book which suggested that humankind began in an age of superstition and myth, that it moved into a stage of religion where the rituals and the teachings of religion gave explanation for the meaning of things. And then he prophesied that now humankind was moving into the age of science. Superstition having been put away, religion now in its waning moments, and the age of science would come in which the human person would be able to explain reality and explain his life, and there would be no more need for superstition or religion, but rather the human person would emerge into a kind of mature and sophisticated, intelligent being that would put all of that behind him or her. Well, It hasn't happened that way. Surprisingly, the modern age has moved into what those who observe these things speak of now as the postmodern age. And what has returned? That sense of mystery, that recognition of the limits of human rationality to untie the knots of our human existence. I returned last evening from Kansas City, where for a couple of days I had given presentations to pastors who are starting new churches across the country, from the state of Washington to Wichita, Kansas, to Grand Forks, North Dakota, to Traverse City, Michigan, across the country, places I didn't even know we had budding Reform congregations. And they were obviously younger. I felt very old. The only good thing about it was that with my gray hair, I could be sort of a sage in their midst, you know, and I could nod knowingly. Yes, I've done that. But I want to tell you, I am so happy that I'm 60 years old and in this wonderfully, solidly founded congregation. I would no more want to go out into the jungle of America and try to start from scratch. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't have the energy. I wouldn't have the courage. They talk about the boomer generation, and I thought that's what was up, but now it's the buster generation. They're in their 20s, and they're talking about how in the world you reach the rising generation. The music they speak of, I hardly would qualify with that label. The kinds of techniques and programs they have to use, it just blew my mind. And then the final moment, they began to talk how they could network with one another and keep in touch. Well, Colette and I are talking about trying to get a newsletter together for a little network of people. I recognize we're dinosaurs. We're anachronisms. They all had little laptop computers. They're going to get on American Online, which will access the internet, which is the cosmic superhighway. They're going to gather at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon and all get into their computers and talk to each other. Well, at that point, frankly, I left the session, went out and smoked my pipe. Oh my goodness, I really thought that maybe I was going to be able to die without ever accessing a computer. I can't even type, you know. I have to write out every word longhand. Well, but as a matter of fact, in this world that is going lickety split into dimensions which we haven't yet dreamed of, the interesting thing is, there still are those ultimate questions. There still is that spiritual yearning. There still is that hole in the soul. And so, I guess that if one wants to be in an ongoing business for which there will always be a market, one probably ought to open a grocery store or become a preacher, because there's hunger on both ends of the spectrum. The human story. What a mystery we are. What a mixed bag we are. We all know stories of moving, sacrificial love. Stories of great heroism. And we are aware as well of stories of unspeakable horror and of awful tragedy. And it's all woven in to this human story. And all of the mythology of the world and all of the religions of the world are really attempts to come to terms with this mystery that we are. And so for a few summer Sundays, let's think about the human story. And let's return to the storybook. And let's see if we can find some paradigms of grace. A paradigm is a model or an example. The Greek preposition para means to lay alongside of. Let's find some biblical stories to lay alongside our experience to see whether or not there are some clues as to how to come to terms with this mystery and this madness, this human story. Well, I return to the beginning, of course. We read the story of the Garden of Eden, the creation of Adam and Eve, and we recognize that that story was written by the Hebrew writer as an attempt to deal with the very questions that bring us to church. Essentially, I think, down deep, there was the question as to why, if God is good and creation is good, why is there so much trouble? And why, finally, do we die? The Hebrew writer was wrestling with those ultimate questions. And in the story that we read a moment ago, there is the affirmation that things are not here by accident or some kind of spontaneous eruption, but rather there was a purpose and intention in the mind and heart of a Creator God who called forth all that is. And then there is also in that story the sense that this God intended for the human story to be lived out in a garden setting, that is, in a place of delight, that the intention of the Creator was for the good of the creature. And the story tells us also of the reason for the trouble that has come upon the human family. The creature endowed with this awful, awesome gift of freedom chooses wrongly rather than to live with the Creator in the harmony of creation. There is now disruption through proud rebellion. And consequently, the consequence of that choice, which brings on the toil and the anxiety and the tragedy that is a part of our human story. Well, that was in the mind of the biblical writer. It was an attempt to affirm the fact that there is a Creator, and that the Creator's intention was for the good of creation, and that the human person was created for fellowship and harmony with creation and Creator, and that what has gone wrong because of the exercise of a very great gift, the abuse and the wrong use of the gift of freedom. And then, of course, the rest of the story is the story of how the Creator will not allow that initial originating intention finally to be frustrated, but will rather begin a process that will end, if not in the Garden of Eden, nevertheless in the city of God. That's why I read the passage from Revelation 22, where there is now a city, not a garden, but a city nonetheless, which is permeated by a river of crystal, whose banks bear trees of life with fruit and leaves for the healing of the nations. In other words, the Hebrew writer understood the tragedy of human existence as an interim state between the perfection of creation's dawn and the new creation that will dawn one day. Let me suggest this morning that while that has served us well and given explanation and made a lot of sense of our human situation, that maybe today we are in a position to reinterpret that whole story and translate it into a medium that may have support from the best knowledge that we have of the physical universe and of the human person. That maybe rather than seeing this initial state of perfection from which we have fallen, that we might better see creation as that process of billions of years that is still becoming, and the human person as a creature, one with that whole creative reality, but emerging. Let me suggest to you this morning that maybe rather than seeing the human family is on a mudslide from perfection to the darkness, that in terms of what we know about the world and physical reality and human personality, maybe the story can better be understood and interpreted in our day as a story of an emergence which is underway, and ourselves as creatures that are on the way. What about the cosmic soup that simmered for 10 billion years that our leading scientists are telling us about today? That took 10 billion years to bring the possibility of a creature with self-consciousness. For that's the unique thing about the human creature, isn't it? We are self-conscious. We can get out of our skin and reflect back on ourselves. What if all of the hell on earth is the consequence of survival instincts by which we got to the point at which we are in the first place? The old evolutionary theories, which began to unlock so much of the mystery of the world and began to throw light on so much that was coming to light in terms of what we know about the world and about creation in its totality and the human family specifically, that whole evolutionary scheme that swept the modern age and caused people to think, well, now Genesis is passé and religion will eventually be over. That scheme of things which was set forth with a kind of initial euphoria and naivete, has fallen on bad days and has been chastened. But nonetheless, it seems to me, from what we know about the world, what we know about the cosmos, and what we know about the human story, the human person, that it makes a lot of sense to see us not as those who in our first parents were created perfect, from which we've fallen, but rather as a race, a species, who have been climbing out of the mud rather than descending into the mud. There is so much mud that clings to us. Don't hear me today giving a kind of optimistic and superficial review of the human story, as though sin is not sin and guilt is non-existent. As a matter of fact, there is no picture that we can paint that is too dark of the human story, unless we fail to add the dimension of grace, the violence, the pain, the war, the personal pride, the selfishness, the greed, all of that that destroys us individually and destroys us always as a threat corporately. All of that is documented in every daily newspaper. We have the potential to self-destruct, and we hold in our hands the awful possibility of destroying our earth. So don't hear me as giving some kind of naive gloss to the human person, but hear me rather as saying that perhaps in terms of all we know, as we try to fit it into this old story, what we really have is a drama that is going on, in which the human person and the race as a whole is constantly dogged and dragged down by that very process out of which we are emerging. In that process, survival was necessary, and violence was a part of the story. That simply is the way it is. There can be no doubt about that. The survival of the fittest is not an illusion, and we still see it operative, even in the social structures of our day, with a competitiveness and with the continual buttressing of the position of those who have power over against the powerless. The world, the human story, the human drama is laced with the terrible wounds of violence, of self-aggrandizement, of self-assertion, and all that comes in the wake of our desire to survive and even to thrive. What if becoming human was the dawn of that consciousness whereby a living creature was able to get out of his or her skin and understand what was going on? And what if that moment of awareness, when I understand that my actions lead either to your well-being or your ill-being, put me before a choice? And when I choose that which diminishes you I incur guilt. And that multiplied across the face of the earth is the human story. Deeply steeped in guilt, because when we have come to a point where we begin to see and to understand, we still choose wrongly, creating the hell that is the world. And what if, in that self-consciousness and awareness, we become aware as well of the lure of God that beckons us toward spirituality? What if we would see in Jesus one fully human who chose for the other and for God, experiencing the violence of the human story in that he was crucified, but when reviled, reviled not again, but rather being tormented, forgave, thereby breaking the cycle of violence and retaliation and vengeance? What if, as human beings who are breathed through by the Spirit of God, we become conscious of the choice before which we stand every moment to live for ourselves at the expense of the other, or to give of ourselves for the good of the other? What if the whole calling of God is to a changed consciousness that calls me to die to myself and to live for you, which is living for God? I wonder whether we are on a pilgrimage which took us billions of years to come to and may take, God forbid, but may take another million or billion years to get to. But what if in the meantime we find that there is grace and life in following that way of Jesus, which is to offer forgiveness rather than retaliation? And from this little circle, there are ripples out that eventually would embrace the whole earth. You see, the gospel is the story of grace. It is good news. It is spoken into the darkness of the human situation, saying to us that God will not quit, God will not abandon, God will not give up on this project until finally the way of Jesus becomes the way of the whole earth. As the couple was forced out of the delight of Eden because of their rebellion. They were clothed by the Creator, which Bible historians have understood as a sign of grace. That though they would bear the consequence of their action, they would not be abandoned by the Creator, who would continue to care for them. The vision of the prophet Isaiah is of a new heaven and a new earth. The closing vision of the New Testament is a vision of a city where there are trees whose leaves heal the nations. And again, the new creation with the presence of God dwelling amidst God's people. I watched a video by the Jewish writer, Elie Wiesel, where he tells Bible stories, the story of Adam and Eve. I thought maybe it could be the sermon and I wouldn't have to work on it, but it wasn't so. But as he concluded the story, you know Elie Wiesel. I've referred to his little book, Night, which is the blackest tale of human experience I've ever read. He was a child who went to the concentration camp, saw his mother and his sisters led to the ovens, followed his father through the horror of those dark years until he saw his father die. Finally, as a young boy liberated by the American troops, having lost his faith in God, but gradually having come again, there he sat, talking about this story. He talked about Adam and Eve who left the garden in their despair. But they had a son. They had a child. And they had a second child. And then lest we get too euphoric about now it's all going to be fine, they had to experience how their one son murdered their other son. Would it be enough at that point just to die? But, says Elie Wiesel, they didn't. They had a third son. On the ashes and the ruins of that devastation, they had a child. You see, the biblical story is such wonderful good news because it tells us, no matter how dark the darkness, because God is God and grace is grace, there will yet be new life. And finally, the healing of the whole. In the meantime, we are called to choose for compassion, which is to die to self, which takes in itself a miracle of grace. Ah, but God is the tireless sculptor of the human heart until he makes us all like Jesus.